disrespect will take you places you can't get to from here. Disrespect entertains with a look at the challenges and sometimes the successes of people with disabilities who have taken from them or are denied the full choice of possibilities to affect for the better their own lives or the lives of those above them. First aired this interview in spring of 2008, when swine flu was a new phenomenon. Father Sam Sansalone was good enough to give us an hour of his time to tell you about his efforts to save his daughter Katya as she struggled with the interventions for a disability that she was born with. We've re-edited this interview extensively with an eye to improving the quality that we achieved despite problems with the equipment when the interview was done. You'll still hear some equipment anomalies, but we hope they don't detract from the truth that Sam is trying to share with us, that every life deserves to be considered of value and to be protected with dignity. Disrespect welcomes Father Sam Sansalone. He's going to talk to us about a story we really can't sum up in 25 words or less. Story of his daughter, the life that she enjoys, barriers that were arrayed against her when she started. Sam, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Okay. Your daughter's name is Katya. Apparently her story's up on YouTube in What Sort of People site, set up by the University of Alberta, you say?
Well, the What Sort Network is a group of researchers, I think, across different disciplines and in different countries that are being coordinated in a project that's being run, as I understand it, by a professor at the University of Alberta, and that's how this ended up on YouTube, actually, is through the university's project.
I have an address. There are a number of addresses here, but the thing they have in common is http://whatsortsofpeople.wordpress.com. And then the date 2009/1, and then they go on from there. So I imagine with that information that somebody could find the blog. And I think there are pictures at that site, are there not?
They have pictures, although I think it's in the form of a clickable picture that becomes a video or a YouTube video.
Okay, all right.
Or a number of them. There were a number of people on the panel besides myself. We all were asked to give presentations on our experiences in this.
Yeah. Katya was born with trisomy 13. Tell us what trisomy 13 is.
Well, more specifically, she has full trisomy 13. And what the trisomy means is just a triplication. There's three chromosomes at a particular level instead of the usual two. Normally, we inherit one chromosome from each parent at each of those levels. And,
all right.
For instance, what's commonly known as Down syndrome is trisomy 21.
Okay.
So you have a triplication of the 21st chromosome. In Katya's case, it's the 13th chromosome, and that's associated with much more severe malformations, usually in medical conditions.
Including developmental challenges.
Yeah, and that's probably the real point of it, that the cognitive disabilities come into pretty serious play.
Why serious?
Well, Katya's 7 now.
Yeah.
And she's operating at a level cognitively where an occupational therapist, for instance, might refer to her as being developmentally a 1-year-old.
That just refers to her problem-solving capability? That doesn't refer to her bodily functions or anything else?
pretty much. Cognitive abilities is the way they put it, or they have a number of different measures: social, physical, her ability to mobilize and communicate, all these sort of different measures.
All right.
And she'll measure at different places in each of the
social
categories.
Social skills, too, yeah.
Well, and social is actually one of the ones she's more advanced in for her condition.
Oh, good.
I sent you those pictures. You can see how interactive and
that's
very
true.
Happy she is.
Yeah. I've often wondered what it would be like for a day to live in a world where everything was marvelously organized. People perform flawlessly, and everything seemed to be done so well on my behalf. It's not the world you and I live in.
Certainly not.
No. It apparently was not really the world that Katya lived in after she was born. What happened to you, your wife, and Katya when you found out that she had full trisomy 13? And when did you find that out?
And our kids, our other kids, too. We found out not even at her birth. It was several days, actually, after her birth. At her birth, surprisingly, she had what they refer to as Apgar scores. She had a 9 and a 9, which is pretty good.
What kind of a score is that?
That's out of 10.
What does it measure?
They measure the child's clinical status or health at the point of birth. I think at 2 points at point of birth, and then a certain number of minutes later, if I'm not mistaken. And she did very well until about 6 hours later, and her O2 saturations just plummeted, which indicated that something was going wrong either with her lungs or her heart. Usually,
right.
It's one of those two areas. And at the time, the neonatologist involved misinterpreted it as being something related to lungs, and they went in the wrong direction. But once they figured out it was cardiological, that's when suspicion started to be brought into the picture that maybe there's besides this cardiological condition, there's an underlying chromosomal defect, and they started pointing out some of the malformations. She wasn't, overtly malformed. She didn't have extra digits or anything like that.
Yeah.
Her ears looked unusual.
Okay.
The shape of her head and her feet. However, some of these things you just come to expect with a newborn anyway. Their ears kind of look folded over anyway sometimes.
Yeah.
And their heads are kind of in unusual shapes from all the trauma going through the birth canal. So, no. Well, the first time I saw a child born was my first child. Katya's our third, and I was sure surprised with how they came out.
Yeah.
But she fooled everyone in the beginning because she was breathing well and had a cry and was able to clear her throat. And
really?
So it wasn't until that point where the cardiologist came in six hours or more later and that they started looking more closely at these malformations.
Oh, yeah.
And it was on their part, they were pretty sure that day that we were dealing with a pretty significant underlying chromosomal defect and that would have implications potentially for her life and health. And it wasn't confirmed until karyotyping days later. But it was, I guess you asked me what it was like. And all I can tell you is there's nothing else like it that we experienced. It was a beautiful birthing experience, and the whole thing was shattered by this terrifying news for both in different ways. There's you're extraordinarily concerned, obviously, about the
child
and their health and their life, and
and
then on the other end of the spectrum, there's these feelings of fear about how is this going to affect our lives and her siblings' lives.
Yeah.
We got four kids.
All right. So Katya's the youngest of the four?
No, she's third.
Okay.
Yeah, we have a younger child.
All right.
All the others are fine. You know, they don't have any medical issues of the sort. They're, what Katya has is called a de novo genetic condition, so it's not inherited.
Spontaneous.
Yeah, it just can happen.
Yeah.
Anywhere.
Shuffle of cards, right. What was the doctor's reaction at the beginning?
Well, initially they were, I think they try to graduate you into awareness of the of all that's going on, and all what the implications are. Before the diagnosis was formalized, they just weren't answering a lot of questions. They were leaving it as something I think that we would get used to the possibility.
Okay.
And by the time they had the diagnosis, it became really clear that they had they were very familiar with how they would approach this kind of problem.
Okay.
There was no question in their mind that a child with full trisomy 13 had what they refer to as a lethal condition, and it was incompatible with life.
Right.
Those were the words that were used by the neonatal intensive care unit's director, you know, the official most senior person in the NICU there at the Hospital for Sick Children in Toronto. And, there were no reservations about it. It was complete
death sentence,
utter, dismal, grim outlook that they were providing. It was a condition called tetralogy of flow, one of the components of which causes the terms are escaping me now. Ductus, or anyway, the valve, or the blood doesn't flow correctly through the heart, and as the kid matures out of the postnatal period, this duct can close and prevent blood from being oxygenated properly. So,
I see.
You know, 30 or 40 years ago, these kids, including the kids who don't have any chromosomal defects, anyone who had this cardiac defect, they just basically not make it.
Right.
But I guess it was about 3 or 4 decades ago that they developed this tetralogy of Fallot repair surgery.
Really?
And it has since become very standard. So any child who does not have a cognitive disability, who presents with this at birth or shortly after birth, this tetralogy of Fallot problem, they will automatically get this very, what is now a very routine, though complex, open heart surgery. But they had absolutely no intention, as we later found out, of letting Katya get this use of those hospital resources.
While you think about that, let's take a musical break. Ray Bonneville, Don't Look Back.
I woke up in a sweat, my lamp down low, nobody in my bed, a quarter to four. Hungry for the fire we used to burn, all the nights we made the world turn. All that jazz, all night blues, move too fast, get confused. I'm feeling too whole, empty like a shell. I don't worry no more, it's another day. Well, oh no, don't let go, it's right around the corner for all you know. Don't look back, it won't be long, for you get a feeling you never had before. No, don't look back. Stealing around the backyard. There's always right, nobody's to blame.
Listening to Sam Sansalone, father of daughter Katya Sansalone, talk about how he advocated for his daughter while she was in hospital, having been born with a disability. When and how did you become aware of that?
It wasn't until weeks later that we became technically aware of it, because initially they were telling us that this is the process for repairing the heart, and it would be a very difficult decision to be making as a parent in this situation because of the what they were referring to as quality of life issues.
Right.
You know, that again, they were telling us it was incompatible with life, that she was going to die. It was lethal. It wasn't a maybe. It was just a when.
Yeah.
And it should be expected within days to weeks.
Mm-hmm.
They later extended that to months.
I see.
After I discovered that not everything they were telling me wasn't true, but as I found out afterwards, some of these kids in the U.S. anyway have lived into their teens and beyond. There was one full trisomy 13 woman, and I think it was in the U.S., who died just a few years ago at an age of over 40 years.
Right.
I think I didn't finish answering your question.
How you became aware?
Yeah.
of the attitude to surgical correction of your daughter's overarching condition.
Yeah. So there was a cardiologist that SickKids Hospital had assigned to Katya, and for some reason I still don't know, they had switched them on us. It was initially a female cardiologist who was very good, and they switched to a different cardiologist.
Mm-hmm.
And Dr. Smallhorn was his name, and he was presenting, you know, along the same lines as the director of the NICU, Dr. Hellman. They were both in line with each other in describing that this was a pretty much hopeless case of a child who's been born, and that we should think carefully about trying to apply these kinds of medical interventions to a child who would have such a low prospect of life, let alone quality of life.
Mm-hmm.
But because I decided to research this independently,
I
noticed something inconsistent in what the information I'd been presented with. So I decided to look into it in more detail and through other sources, and it became clear that the information we had been given wasn't accurate.
Right.
And certainly wasn't complete. The range of outcomes of these kids is actually very wide.
All right.
And the literature had years before made very clear through well-known studies that 5 to 10% of the live births with full trisomy 13 go on to survive infancy and have what would be described as quality of life by any standard ethical measures.
Right.
And so when we
just to be clear, that they don't live in pain. They don't live with disadvantages that can't be dealt with.
They could have a plethora of medical circumstances like to deal with. Like Katya, for instance, has over 40 things she's followed for.
Right.
But none of them currently are life-threatening, and none of them are causing her any pain or anything. So sure, she'll go, for instance, a cardiac surgery required, painful medical procedure, but they wouldn't think twice about allowing a child to suffer, cardiac surgery for the sake of life.
Right.
If it was a kid without cognitive disability, but the way they were painting the picture to us, it was, you're putting them through all this for nothing. So
right.
The way Dr. Smallhorn had put it is he would hate to be in our position to make that kind of decision. But
that's
that,
that in itself, that's kind of arrogant, isn't it?
I'm sorry?
That's kind of arrogant in itself, isn't it? He'd hate to be in your position. I mean, he's not in your position.
Well, it was a bit of an awkward conversation, but actually at that point we were all on good terms because I was pretty much... We had no reason to seriously question what they were telling us, and so I just interpreted that as a sincere and caring medical interpretation of the facts of what we're dealing with, and so the best way to deal with that would be to just let the child go peacefully without submitting them to all these medical interventions.
Right.
That would, and I would agree with that if it was true. Her major life-threatening issues, primarily the cardiac one in her case, have been successfully dealt with. She got the cardiac surgery. It was an exquisitely skilled, talented cardiac surgeon at the Hospital for Children in Toronto. They did a fantastic job
of
repairing her heart. Dr. Van Arsdell, just a Spanish friend of mine said, gave him a name referring to, in Spanish, it was Golden Hands or something.
Yeah.
To that effect. So we got a fantastic intervention from a physician who believed in not judging who was worthy of life-saving cardiac surgery just based on social pressures. He was someone who, as he described himself, loved to interfere with natural history in a way that allowed kids to experience their full potential.
Wow. Wow, what a guy.
Yeah, there's quite a range of people at that hospital. Most of the people we have dealt with are extraordinarily good. There's a lot of reason to have great feelings and good feelings for the Hospital for Sick Children, for all the many, many good things they do and the many good people who work there.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's this dark side of a minority of mm-hmm. very influential people there who...
And judgmental.
Yeah, beyond that. They're a danger to kids like Katya.
Okay.
I mean, we had very fond feelings for staff and the institution. And, you know, my wife is actually the first recipient of the of a physician getting a humanitarian award at the Hospital for Sick Children.
Mm-hmm. So now Katya's come out of this. Do you want to talk about the outcome? Do you want to talk about corrective measures? Where do you want to go?
Wow, those are all pretty loaded areas, aren't they?
Yeah. Well, we can deal with them separately or at length, too, if you wish, but I'm just curious where the emphasis lies with you on what's important about this. I think the most important thing is that Katya's alive and she's happy.
Well,
beyond
exactly.
There are other things that are important, too.
Well, I'm thinking about how the connection was made to you, and I heard about you through... a very prominent professor in Alberta who's familiar with Katya's story. And,
well, in turn, I heard about him through a very prominent organization that argues on behalf of disabled people and their medical rights. So I'm indebted to them, too.
So I guess in that context, I guess what perhaps I should highlight here is that there is a problem with... there's a plight that cognitively disabled neonates find themselves in.
Right.
They're not being protected. Their lives are not being valued or protected.
Right.
By the medical institutions that are otherwise outstanding in their service to the citizens of that province in this country. And that amounts to a discrimination that does not belong in a civilized country, and certainly does not belong in a healthcare institution for children.
Discrimination in this country, in my experience, though, is viewed more like bad manners rather than an act of hate, which, in my opinion, it is. Do you feel discrimination is the place to start with this kind of action? Is it the best handle we have on it?
If I'm understanding the question correctly...
Is to call it discriminatory the strongest handle we have on this?
Well, actually, if you're intentionally putting someone's life at risk or taking their life away, that goes beyond discrimination. I mean, mm-hmm. that implies even criminal mm-hmm. activity, and on the one extreme, and negligence that's completely inappropriate. And
but negligence implies no intent, doesn't it?
Well, unless it's criminal negligence.
Oh, all right.
And then there's certainly intent.
Okay.
On some level, in some form, that would have caused the harm that resulted from the negligence. And, there can be intentional negligence, and certainly we, as far as we can tell, with every ounce of our understanding and capacity to reason, it's very clear that there is intentional withholding mm-hmm. of needed interventions for Katya's life. And I don't think they're doing this for the cause of being rude, or I don't even think they're thinking in terms of how know, bad this might be morally, there's a sort of pragmatic side that a lot of people will look at when they're dealing with these issues. These kids are very expensive, and not that that doesn't at all justify immoral or illegal or criminal behavior.
No.
But we do have to face the fact that we're in an envelope funded healthcare system in this country, and there are limited funds, and we have to accommodate what our needs are without overextending the system. But at the same time, if we want to be an ethical society, truly ethical, based on real values that we really say we believe in, then we just simply have to find a way to be able to afford to do this.
Do you want to talk about the advocacy efforts?
I can't stress that, in my experience, it's not going to be enough just to connect with other parents and other organizations. You will have to become very informed as a parent on the medical aspects of what your child's dealing with, and you'll have to be very diligent and knowing the reasons why your child has developed certain symptoms, and what the... I'll always make sure you get the full differential diagnosis for something. That's what that means, is not just what they think is the most likely explanation or most likely diagnosis. The differential gives you a list
of possibilities,
of other possibilities, and frankly, it's sometimes the other things on the list that turn out to be the ones that needed to be addressed.
So access to a university or academic medical library, which is generally granted for a limited period of time during the study term, and for effectively unlimited periods of time outside the study term in major cities, is an advantage that people could take too.
Yeah. And some hospitals have, like SickKids has what I found to be an extraordinarily good parent library, actually.
Wow.
Parent resource center.
Wow.
Run by a woman there who's been, I mean, her whole group there has been very helpful to us in very critical periods where Katya was in pretty serious medical dire circumstances, and we were able to get excellent information and resources through that resource center. I just can't remember what they're calling it now at SickKids, but it's
it'd be big. It wouldn't be hard to find.
Yeah, and a lot of the like there, Alberta Children's Hospital in Calgary has one.
All right.
That I think is also well stocked with materials that for parents to read.
Okay.
And the librarians could be very good at quickly locating information for you.
Okay.
And of course, whatever good relationships you have at the hospital and people who you can trust, they nurture those friendships and relationships. And bear in mind, there are some resources within the hospital that could be very pivotal. For instance, in our case with the cardiac surgery, the bioethics department at the Hospital for Sick Children was extraordinarily
supportive.
Helpful in that beginning period. There were some, disappointing experiences later, but certainly in that beginning period with the cardiac issue, they were very instrumental in helping to ensure that the debate on whether Katya had a right to the surgery, that after it was won, that the hospital would actually implement what was correct from an ethical standpoint.
Okay.
Because the battle wasn't over when we won the debate, let me put it that way. So, and the bioethics department was certainly helpful. You may have to request that because you may not find that that the hospital will volunteer these services to you. And another department is the patient rep service. But I just got a, same thing there with whether you're you're talking about the bioethics department or the patient representative department, they don't report to you. They report to hospital administrators.
All right.
And
so it's up to them.
They call it a patient rep. I don't know why they call it that. They're a facilitator of some sort.
Okay.
They're more a hospital rep than a patient rep.
Okay.
And when the going gets tough, you know, as long as the going doesn't get tough, then it'll feel like you have a patient representative. But if the going gets tough, they're doing what their bosses are telling them.
Okay.
So, and the bosses aren't all going to be in line necessarily with what the parent wants for that child.
Right. I don't know whether it's true where you live, but where I live, the provincial government, after the SARS outbreak in Toronto, decided to set a hierarchy of people who would be entitled to flu-fighting antivirals after another outbreak. And we're now facing this emergence of swine flu from Mexico. So it's very topical. And they decided that severely developmentally challenged people weren't entitled to antivirals. And I'm quite surprised that this went unremarked in society at large.
No, I'm not aware of that. That actually quite surprises me.
Well, that's Ontario. Yeah. And what surprised me was that it was made public and there was no reaction to it. I don't mean a negative reaction to it or a positive or a feeble reaction to it. As far as I could determine, there was no reaction to it. And with this swine flu emerging again, I'm surprised that if there wasn't a reaction then, now is the time. You know, and so this attitude doesn't seem to be limited to the hospitals or to, well, of course, it would be doctors that they would refer to when they made these decisions.
Well, no, I don't. I would agree. I there's no way that even what we experienced would be limited at the hospital level. I
mean,
when you think of who the stakeholders are and who takes care of providing and administering the budget for healthcare, which is very substantial in Ontario as it is in other provinces, and there's no way that this is simply happening at
internal hospital.
There's just no way. And it's not that it's non-existent. It happens very routinely, from what we can tell, in the U.S. as well. There's rationing policies, healthcare rationing policies. Implemented everywhere. What I find extraordinary, though, is there seems to be a particularly effective rationing system going on against cognitively disabled kids in Ontario.
Yeah.
There's certainly, and probably in other parts of Canada, where we have similar kinds of government.
But you just don't have experience of them in other parts of Canada.
Well, not in the same
context.
Certainly not in the same context, because when Katya was dealing with life-threatening issues of that nature, it was in Toronto.
Yeah, okay.
But I have no doubt from what I've heard elsewhere and what I've actually been able to observe in other cases elsewhere, that the same thing happens.
Do you have any Do you have any recommendations for someone without your courage to go and research yourself and without your wife's background in medicine, however minimally that may have given you an advantage, someone who has given birth to a developmentally challenged and physically challenged child, what steps they should take to make sure this doesn't happen to them?
Yeah, if they, well, first of all, if they have to decide if they believe that a child with cognitive disabilities has value.
Right.
As long as they can have, you know, a happy existence, if they believe that, as I, you know, very much do, and I think we all should,
mm-hmm.
Then yes, there are definitely things that, very specific things. Oh boy, there are so many things you can do. Certainly get connected with, parent-to-parent groups.
Okay.
That are outside the hospital.
Okay.
There are some systems that are in place or being put in place inside the hospital, and they could be very good too. You just have to make sure
they're not co-opted. Yeah.
That you're getting fully independent parent to parent.
All right.
You know, connection.
All right.
Support, and unfortunately, a lot of these organizations will be located in the U.S. anyway, because there's such a larger population there, and they've developed some family-centered care initiatives and have done a lot of parent-to-parent connection organizing. So if your child has a particular disorder that's very specific, there's a good chance that if there's an organization to help support you and give you information, that it's probably in the U.S.
All right.
And that's actually where we got our first important connection, and they were very helpful.
Well, these are trans-border issues, so if they're not unkindly disposed to Canadians, you should get no less help from an organization in the U.S. than Canada.
Mm-hmm. Now, that's not going to be enough, though, I can tell you right now.
All right.
In our case, it was, there were periods where we had to have an almost athletic diligence to everything that was going on with Catchy Medicles. We would be reading the chart. You should be reading the chart daily.
Really?
They'll probably try to prevent you, but you have every right to take pictures of the chart.
Yeah.
Whether it's a digital camera or whatever, just take pictures of the chart.
Even with your cell phone, yeah.
I'm afraid that I have to suggest that you record conversations, which you can do in Ontario.
Yeah.
Without permission of every party, as long as you're one of the parties to the conversation.
Right.
You can record that conversation without permission of the other people if you're in Ontario. That's my knowledge.
Yes, that's my knowledge too.
Okay. And the reason why I'm saying to do these precautionary things is, for one thing, it's going to help them realize that you're being diligent parents and you're not to be dismissed as someone who's going to simply
fold.
Yeah. And that in itself will hopefully be somewhat of a deterrent to the kinds of behaviors we've seen that could put your child at risk if they're severely cognitively, I should have said severely cognitively disabled.
Okay.
Because those are the ones who are most vulnerable from what we can tell.
Yeah.
Have a really good community pediatric support. We had an outstanding community pediatrician, or actually...
community meaning not of the hospital.
Right.
Okay.
And they could be connected with the hospital. They could have hospital privileges.
Yes.
But you will still want to have some, to the degree that you're able to apply. Now, when your child's admitted, there's only so much an external doctor can do. But it was incredible. Mm-hmm. You could have a clinical presentation of a symptom, and that could have several different interpretations. If you're looking at the management of a medical situation from the viewpoint of how can we make sure that we do everything possible to save this child's life, you know, that's one thing. But if the doctors are saying, how can we, what's the best way to get this child to just, you know, leave this life?
So
they don't have to
deal with it.
Then you're going to get a different bias to everything.
Well, it sounds like you have a good handle on what has to be done if this would happen again. Unfortunately, you had to learn it the hard way the first time. I appreciate your sharing it with a listener. Is there anywhere people can go to get more information ahead of time on this kind of thing? We mentioned the whatsortsofpeople.wordpress.com site. Where else can they go?
Well, as far as getting a parent connection, there aren't too many set up in Canada yet. They are forming. There's one in Calgary that's forming that had aspirations of going beyond, you know, the region and provincial limit here, but it's not quite ready for doing much nationally. That is a pretty much hospital-based one.
Yeah.
Certainly, you can, just by simply Googling the child's condition, you will certainly find parent support groups.
Oh, okay. That's a good idea.
And so you might want to Google the condition and then parent-to-parent or parent support. And then typically these organizations will have individuals who have been either trained or otherwise selected to be able to answer questions and provide information to parents who are new to this, you know, part of their new lives. And that's certainly a good place to start.
I can recommend another organization that introduced me to your contact was notdeadyet.org. Just the way it sounds, notdeadyet.org. It's an American disability organization that advocates for the medical rights and the quality of life and dignity of people with disabilities. And their blog by Stephen Drake is also online and very topical and very interesting.
And very knowledgeable and very principle-centered.
Yeah.
Also in Canada, perhaps less vocal, but certainly well-networked, would be the Community Association, CACL Community Association for Community Living.
Oh, yeah.
They will have chapters in each province that you can be connected with.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, in Alberta, there's the Alberta Association of Community Living. And these are organizations that are advocacy groups for people with disabilities, including those with cognitive disabilities.
Sam, we've talked for the longest I've ever held an interview, and there hasn't been a moment when I've been uninterested in what has to be said. But was there anything else that you wanted to say about this?
Boy, I wouldn't know where to start with the rest of what should be told. Let me say this much now, that I really do believe there is an important issue that we're grappling with at this point, and specifically in our society. You know, we're an envelope-funded healthcare system society that's being stressed by the demands that healthcare puts on, you know, the resources. And these kids, there's no doubt they're expensive. They have higher medical needs, higher costs for getting them what they need to survive. But a lot of these things that they have to deal with are things that, if you take them one at a time, they were not so uncommon. Like, for instance, Catch's tetralogy of Fallot repair. If it was just that, there are kids who
routine.
Have no other issues. Or if it's just, you know, needing a walk or just needing physiotherapy to help someone learn how to walk or something like that. It's, you know, it doesn't seem like such an extraordinary expense, but when you have a child with this many all in one person, they become expensive children. And we can't drop the morality and drop the ethics and the values that we claim to hold and cherish just because money's an issue.
Yeah.
Or just because resources and wait times are an issue. I just so believe that as challenging a problem as this will be for us to, you know, find a solution to, that the human spirit is such that we will find a way.
Yeah.
We will. We will. I mean, who would have pictured even 100 or 200 years ago that, you know, we'd have hospitals that are have this much capacity, and they have libraries where parents can go learn about their kids' condition and they can get support. Who would have envisioned this? You know, not many people. So we can't envision easily, perhaps right now, but how we as a society can afford to take care of these medical needs that these people with special medical needs. But we will find a way. We just have to decide to do the right thing. And mankind's ingenuity and the beauty of our morality when it's applied fully, you know, without discrimination, that will help us find a way so we can be both ethical and not overextending ourselves financially as a society. I'm sure there's a way. We just have to pursue it.
I appreciate that, Sam. Why don't you stay on the line? I'll wrap up the interview. Thanks, Sam.
Thank you.
You're listening to the father of 7-year-old Katya Sansalone, Sam Sansalone, and the impression he clearly got at a Canadian hospital that as a disabled child, her life wasn't valued, and she wouldn't be provided with the surgical or other interventions that other children would be. In the middle of the interview, you heard Ken Sadak, Kloklo Boogie, followed by Jay Owens, Crosstown Love.
It's 4 in the morning. I just got in. I'm tired and I'm hungry. I'm alone again. I pick up the phone and dial my baby's number. She answers and says, "You finally remember." So out the door, I called Speedy Joe. "Hey man, I need to go 1300th Tracy Way. That's where my baby stays. Crawled down. Baby, I'm on my way. Yes, I am. My crosstown love. That's thinking of her." And my dinner too. When it comes to love, girl, know what to do. But most of all, when I'm down and out, she tell me, "Daddy, you can't lose. So don't you doubt, baby. Girl, I'm on my way. Yes, I am. I never thought that you'd be around. Happiness, love, brain, like a sweet, sweet tune when I squeeze my strain. Yeah, child. I never thought that you'd be around. At the match, love brings like a sweet, sweet tune. When a sweet mind strains, baby, baby. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Cross town girl, cross town love. Cross town girl, that's who I'm bringing up. Cross town girl, just can't get enough of the girl.
You can now listen to the show wherever you're near the internet. Disrespect is streamed live at http://cfmu.msumcmaster.ca. You can email us at dialogue, D-I-A-L-O-G-U-E, at radio.fm. Disrespect is archived at www.radioforall.net. That's the number four, not the word, radioforall.net. You can find the shows under its name, Disrespect. Tune in at Showtime, Thursdays at noon, 93.3 FM, CFMU, to see if something more topical hasn't displaced the show that we planned. Disrespect is digitally edited from live, telephone, and studio interviews. You can now listen to the show wherever you're near the internet. Disrespect is streamed live at http://cfmu.msumcmaster.ca. You can email us at dialogue, D-I-A-L-O-G-U-E, at radio.fm. Disrespect is archived at www.radioforall.net. That's the number four, not the word, radioforall.net. You can find the shows under its name, Disrespect. Tune in at Showtime, Thursdays at noon, 93.3 FM, CFMU, to see if something more topical hasn't displaced the show that we planned. Disrespect is digitally edited from live, telephone, and studio interviews.